Welcome to SRA, the missing piece in the puzzle. My name is Simon Kitson, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer and Group Economist for Investment Science. Today, we'd like to introduce you to a new risk-targeting-based portfolio construction methodology that we call strategic risk allocation, or simply SRA. Now, whilst we naturally think that SRA is the funkiest and sexiest portfolio construction methodology around, we also intend to show you today that it's not just a great way for a skilled manager to deliver more returns for a given level of risk undertaken. It's also a great way to undertake the planning process. Now, David Tuohy, our Chief Investment Officer, will cover SRA as a portfolio construction methodology, whereas I will walk you through its utilization in the planner-client space as a planning tool. Now, we've got some brochures over here that you can grab on the way out that basically follow the path of this presentation, and it will allow you to re-examine some of the issues in greater detail at a less frenetic pace. Now, this is a presentation about strategic risk allocation, and we're completely unaware of your personal circumstances, so obviously we're not giving personal advice, and we're not here to suggest that SRA is appropriate for your purposes. Now, our agenda for today kicks off by going back to basics and asking that question, why does a client visit a financial planner? After all, everything that we do as portfolio managers, as portfolio constructors, has to link back ultimately to some definable, measurable, and observable objective. Now, I'm going to hand over to David a little later on, and he will talk to you about SRA, as I said, as a portfolio construction methodology, and he will commence this by examining the prevailing strategic asset allocation approach and its shortcomings, and explain to you why it has failed investors. David will then hand the floor back to me, and I will walk you through the SRA Advisor tool. Now, this is a piece of a software that is used extensively by those planners who have adopted the SRA approach. I'll address the key issues of clients, and I'm going to note two particular themes. The first one is a target retirement income, and also what we call the eat well, sleep well risk path. We'll then break for some questions for about 10 minutes, and then I will wrap up the session. Now, let's go back to ground zero and just ask that question. Just why does someone come to visit a planner in the first place? Now, whilst you could answer that there's various value-adding propositions such as tax structures and estate planning, etc., we would argue that their primary objective is to develop and implement a plan to achieve a targeted retirement income, or TRI for short. Now, once a client has established that target retirement income, determining whether they are on target to its achievement is really their primary benchmark. And in fact, reference to some 70-30 fund index, etc., really is quite unhelpful, because all it really does is gives them some sort of guide as to how somebody else might be going. Now, having determined the TRI, the job is really only partially done, because there really are a number of things that keep us all awake at night. Now, you can go forward. First of all, will my returns be sufficient to meet my needs? And if not, just how bad could things be? How little might we have to live on? Of course, that's a question being asked by a lot of people, particularly in the United States. The second question is that we might actually have an uneven series of risk throughout our lifetime, and Sod's Law being exactly what it is, you can guarantee that basically at the very moment our exposure to risk is at its highest, we'll have a setback from which we find it almost impossible to recover prior to retirement. And I'm sure that's something for the planners in the room, they're having to grapple with a number of their clients. The third thing that we worry about is will we actually outlast our savings? I.e., will we live longer than our planner has modelled? So we all want to eat well in retirement, but at the same time, we want to sleep well now. So we need to manage that return shortfall risk, i.e. the risk between our target retirement income and any potential shortfall. We want to manage life cycle risk to ensure that risk is evenly spread out over our lifetime. And then thirdly, we want to manage longevity risk, i.e. make sure that our savings outlive us. So the $64,000 question that we've got to ask today is, well, is strategic asset allocation, the prevailing method, up to the task? I'm now going to hand over to David, and he's going to address this very important question and then also introduce you to strategic risk allocation.
Thank you, Simon. There are four reasons why SAA has failed investors. Number one is market cap weighting is a buy high, sell low bias. Number two, utilising a beta-first approach actually inhibits the construction of better diversified portfolios. Number three is defensive asset classes, subtract value versus simple cash strategies. And number four is that active equities funds subtract value versus a simple index strategy. With problem number one, there's a buy high, sell low bias to embedded in market cap weighted indices. This is explained really well by Rob Arnott in talking about fundamental indices. But we show here a great example from the Japanese stock market shown here over 40 years, but it's really the last 20 of interest, which is that at the very peak, it was 51% of market cap indices, and it lost 80% over the next 14 years. And at that point, it was only 9%. So that's a great example of the buy high, sell low bias we're talking about. The second problem is that the first thing an SAA approach does is to fix allocations to traditional asset classes. And that means it has zero allocations, explicitly zero allocations to active strategies and low or zero allocations to non-traditional alternatives. So this beta-first constraint actually means that these types of investments, which have the better diversifying characteristics, actually are underinvested compared to what their true optimal allocations should be. We show here our estimates of the long-term risk premium as a return over cash for these asset classes, and plotted against the standard deviation. We've drawn in a wavy line which represents the retail fee hurdle, and you can see that the defensive asset classes are all below an assumed 1.8% effective cost of being invested in these through financial advice structures. So it's actually rational for an investor to actually only invest their gross assets portion of their portfolio through financial advice structures, and then to invest the defensive part into, say, the high-earning online bank accounts, and not pay financial advisors any fees on that portion. The fourth problem is that active equities funds subtract value versus a simple index strategy. This beta-first approach actually forces managers, those who would be choosing funds, into the most old and the most efficient asset classes, which is very hard to add value. This chart is explained a lot better in the academic paper that accompanies this this talk, but what it's showing here is that there was the CPG Research and Advisory Survey of the six major asset consultants has actually shown over the 7 years that all of them have subtracted value after fees when you assume, in this case, a 0.9% per annum wholesale cost of accessing that. But that's from in trying to outperform the traditional asset classes. The underperformance is so consistent after 7 years that the average return, shown here as the bold line, is statistically significant underperformance at the 99.5% confidence level. So strategic risk allocation has been designed to reduce the linear constraints in portfolio construction to just one, and that is the amount of risk that the portfolio targets. This means removing the traditional constraints and instead investing in any combination of assets such that the total portfolio risk remains in accordance with the designated target over the medium to long term, which we take to be roughly 5 years. Strategic risk allocation encompasses all available investment instruments, techniques and strategies. So the set of SRA strategies actually includes the set of SAA strategies. So SAA is a subset of SRA. And so as a logical consequence of set theory, upon which probability theory is built, the maximum return of the subset cannot be greater than the maximum return of the entire set. In fact, we'd go on to say that really the only way you could expect that the returns, the maximum return of both sets is the same, is that if the manager applying both doesn't have any skill. In the hypothetical example shown here, we assume that an investor starts with $100,000 and is invested in the SRA 9 portfolio. In this case, SRA 9, the number means a percent risk target. So 9% risk means $9,000 per annum standard deviation for this portfolio. The expected return, assuming the assumptions here, we won't go into it now, is 11.8% per annum, and so we expect $111,800 at the end of the year. If we were to assume a normal distribution over 1 year, then there's a 16% chance of a closing balance less than $102,800. But we emphasise that SRA merely acts as a position size, and what we roughly say corresponds to the average size of the surprise. So you expect $111,800, and you know you're never going to get that, so the average size which you deviate from that is equivalent to the SRA. But beyond one standard deviation, well, we're not actually suggesting that SRA is actually a useful tool. You're not a pro in this business if you use position sizing and tail risk distributions from the same probability model. And if you want an example of how some smart guys stuff that up, just Google long-term capital management. We actually suggest that the nasty characteristics in the tail can and should be managed by prudent management and by a boundary risk constraints. Now, when we look at how we invest at investment science, we note that, as we explain in the table here, we've reversed the process. We've gone, well, the traditional process is beta first and then alpha second. We go alpha first, beta second, hedges third. This is explained a lot better in the booklet. And what we've been able to do using these techniques is to actually add value in the market environment that we've just had. There's a handout in the booklet that you get there which shows our returns, and you'll note that the SRA portfolios are the ones that have gone up and the SAA portfolios are the ones that have gone down. The risk equivalents have all gone down. So the way we invest is that we first of all look for investments that are expected to outperform. And what that means to us is that we firstly look for those which have the high potential to outperform. So it's mainly high conviction, high tracking error type products. We then look for those in the most inefficient markets where the manager with skill can outperform, those who aren't really trying. And we also look for advantage. This really relates to the product. The product advantage whereby any manager accessing that idea, consistently accessing that idea in a competent fashion, has the advantage over others and can outperform the benchmark. We break this up into each component and to also estimate the fees. And so obviously then we bias the selection and the manager search to those, or product search to those products which have the highest expected outperformance after fees. We then measure the market exposures, which means beta second, and we then manage those market exposures using hedges, using derivative contracts to hedge that. Now, we're often told that diversification diversification is the investor's free lunch. So let's check which is more diversified. The SIA portfolio shown is represented in terms of risk, and here we're showing risk as the allocation times by the standard deviation. The feature of this portfolio is that the allocation to equities dominates the risk, which is shown in the bold outline. Now, let's look at a hypothetical portfolio constructed using the SRA approach that targets the same level of risk as the portfolio on the previous slide. The equity pieces of the pie now cover only one third of the risk instead of three quarters, and the best diversified pieces, which is the manager risk, covers 47% of the risk instead of only 22%. We've highlighted the manager risk by exploding them out from the chart. So the SRA approach facilitates the construction of better diversified portfolios and actually allows the skilled manager to generate high expected returns for the same level of risk. I'll now hand back to Simon, who will demonstrate how SRA is not just a great way to construct portfolios, but a better way to plan. He will demo the SRA advisor tool designed to help clients achieve their retirement income objectives and to address the three key issues that keep them awake at night.
Thank you very much, David. Right, let's go back to my opening points when we said that clients don't just invest for the sake of it. They have a very specific objective, and that objective is to have, as we've said, enough money in their retirement. And we've said that there's three key risks that we really need to be addressing. The first is that return shortfall risk, i.e. the risk they just won't have sufficient funds to meet all their needs. The second one that we've spoken about is that life cycle risk, i.e. the need for us to spread the returns or the risk of those returns. And then the third thing that we've got there is that longevity risk, i.e. will my savings outlast me? That's the most important thing. Now, what I want to do now is to dive straight into the SRA advisor tool. And the first thing I want to say is that this is the purpose of this is to demonstrate how a SRA planner utilises these tools. This is not some attempt to sell you some software at all. It's only available to those people who are using SRA. So let's just go through this and look at the various components. In this particular instance, we've got a client who's age 40. He's intending to retire at 65, has a starting amount of $200,000, a yearly contribution of $10,000, a contribution growth over the rate of inflation of 0%. Now, we're assuming an inflation rate here of 2.5%, consistent with the RBA's target of 2 to 3% over the cycle. Now, the next thing is we look at the SRA retirement level. What we're doing here is saying, well, let's set the risk for where they want to have that exposure at the point of retirement. Now, you'll see how we work backwards fairly shortly. The next thing is to look at various lump sums that might occur because, of course, the vast majority of your clients, for those of you who are planners, will have insurance policies or inheritances or perhaps businesses they're selling, etc. Now, we've got three here. An upgraded version of this tool will allow you to put as many cash flows in as you like. A lot of people will be using this, particularly in that early phase of retirement, to put in cash flows relating to overseas holidays, for example, and wanting to exclude those from the remaining retirement income. We've got here that we're solving using this model for this target retirement income, and we've got in this particular example $68,323 per annum, which is what their target income is in this instance. Now we're going to move on to the top graph, and in the top graph there we've got the black line, which represents the client's account balance. We then move on, and this is a very critical component of what we've been talking about today, and this is looking at that issue of life cycle risk. What we're looking at here is a level of risk that constantly declines over the investor's lifetime through to retirement, then remains fairly constant thereafter. In the blue bars, we're looking there at the various cash flows. These could be both positive and negative. Unfortunately, many of your clients have things like divorces or they have things like children getting into trouble. Then we move down to the bottom graph, and the blue bars there represent the contributions. Now, the reason they're flat, because everything is done on today's dollar basis. Then we move on to the orange bars. This is the client's target retirement income, and obviously going to be one of the things that we're paying closest attention to. We also plot, in this particular instance, this broken line here. Now, what this represents is, if you like, the luckiest or unluckiest path that we might actually take at the 10th percentile. Now, what we should now be doing is moving on and looking at those three different risks, and then after that, we'll see if we can change some of these variables to see what sort of impact it has. So, first of all, let's look at that return risk and see what that does. Our objective here, obviously, is to generate sufficient returns to achieve the target retirement income, always mindful of how bad things might get. And what's particularly important is this lower line. No one's going to get terribly excited about what the upper line is, because that's all just cream on the cake for us. Really, what we're concerned about is the gap between your target retirement income and your lower income. That is a key planner client task. Now, the next slide, we look at the life cycle risk. Now, our objective here is to spread the risk as evenly as possible through the client's lifetime. Now, many planners currently use a strategic asset allocation approach, and what they do is they assume a static profile. And what I've done there is I've put there the broken blue line. So the client will go into the planner's office and they'll sit down with them and say, right, well, we're putting you into a high growth portfolio in order to achieve your target retirement income objectives. Now, that's going to lead to one of two things in this respect. The first one is that if you actually left your risk at this level all the way through, what it means is that you're exposing yourself to a level of risk and a setback in your portfolio at precisely the time you can least afford to claw back from it. Now, if you say, oh, yes, well, we put this in here, but we're not really going to do that. We'll obviously dial down the client's risk over time, just as you're doing here. Well, that's fine. But what that, of course, means is that there is a massive overestimation of the likely retirement income taking place for the client. So instead of a static single strategy equity buy and hold profile, what we're suggesting is that you should have a dynamic multi-strategy risk path that should be modelled. Now, we maintain that a client's profile needs to be systematically reduced over time, and what you're trying to do there is hold constant hold constant this line in dollar terms. Because what you're saying is if I'm, for example, if you've got two clients, one who's 27 and one who's 77, and they both lost 30%, which one's got the bigger problem? Obviously the 77-year-old. Sorry? Absolutely. So let's move on to the final one, which is the longevity risk. Now, obviously a profile needs to be adopted to make sure that the client's savings last as long as they do. Now, in this particular example, what we've got here is an annuity profile that fades off. And the idea here is we're trying to make sure that at no point the client has a surprise and runs out of money. Now, the model actually also allows you to pick an age, and you can actually say, right, well, I expect the client to die at, say, 96, and I just need the money to last through till then. What we're doing is using an actuarial process here, and the rate of decline is linked with the probability of death at each of those date points. So let's now turn to the main screen, and let's first of all alter the returns by 2%. Now, the reason we've chosen that, that's to reflect an amount by which we would confidently expect an SRA portfolio to outperform a strategic asset allocation portfolio. Now, we were up at 68,000. You can see now this portfolio has plunged to 38,000. So I think you can see that if you're using the wrong portfolio construction methodology and deliver lower returns for the given level of risk, the consequences for the client are quite extraordinary. So let's change something else now. Let's have a look at the yearly contribution. Now, we were starting that off, if you recall, at $10,000 initially. Now, I've moved the adjusted return back to zero again, raised this up to $12,000, and now when we look, it's gone from 68 to 73. So that's by just raising it for $2,000 as a starting point. Now, that's not sufficient to get us to say, let's say the target is $80,000. It's not sufficient to get us there, but it's certainly a good start. Now let's move and try something else. Why don't we look at increasing the contribution over the rate of inflation by a couple of percent? So each year that $10,000 will go up by inflation plus 2% in this instance, and we've now gone from $68,000 to almost $75,000. So again, not all the way to a target of $80,000, but certainly heading in the right direction. Another variable that we can alter here is, of course, the retirement age. Now, in this example, move the retirement by 2 years out to 67, and the impact there is it takes it up to 76,000. So there's, of course, nothing stopping you from doing a mixture of these variables to try and work out what the target retirement income should be, and whilst also making sure we're managing this gap between the target and any potential shortfall. So financial planners can use the SRA Advisor tool to, first and foremost, set a dynamic risk path. Now, currently we've seen a lot of clients come under a great deal of pressure in their portfolios. And if the client responds to this poor investment returns, by actually lowering that portfolio risk overall, then what they're actually going to do is lock in a lower target retirement income and that lower income line, that potential shortfall, that 10th percentile level, that unluckiest path. Now, this is akin to really managing the portfolio using an option, and we all know when you convexity hedge a portfolio with options, there's a cost that goes there with. So really the role of the financial planner in this instance is to help set realistic goals and a eat well, sleep well risk path that the client is going to stick to, because that effectively sticking to that risk path is the replacement for buy and hold. Now, in the case of poor investment returns, what the client should be doing is, in fact, increasing their contributions or extending their retirement. Now, for the investment function in relation to this, you allocate a risk budget to the investment manager. Now, we've gone through that first step of basically determining the target retirement income. We've built our eat well, sleep well risk path, and we've picked an SRA at retirement. Remember, we set that at 5%, and with the SRA Life software optimizing the starting SRA for the client, the starting risk level, by ensuring that that path always keeps a constant SRA in dollar terms. So in other words, that we keep the risk level constant throughout an investor's lifetime to avoid that life cycle risk that we spoke of. Now what we're going to do is head to the SRA analyst tool and have a look to see whether or not the client can actually live and sleep well with that degree of risk, that 12% that we've suggested there. Now, we can do this by inserting, first of all, their portfolio. This might be simply dragging the information down because you've used the tool before. It might be adopting a model portfolio from your particular planning group, or it might be actually just typing in a customized portfolio. Now, we can then create a new portfolio. Again, we could choose just a pure SRA portfolio. It might be a hybrid, a combination of SRA funds and direct equities and other funds that you particularly like. Or it could be just a pure SAA portfolio made up of other funds and direct equities. You select the portfolios that you want to compare. The two portfolios are compared here in tabular form. All of this is in the document if you want to grab one, and it will walk you through. And then up here, we're going to start comparing the two portfolios and look at the degree of risk that the client is exposing themselves in today's terms. I've pressed it three times, so it'll probably jump ahead now as I turn my back. What I've done here is combined a number of charts, and the first chart that we're going to be looking at, we're going to work in a clockwise formation, is we're going to look at it from a risk-return basis, comparing the two portfolios and saying, right, here's my new portfolio, this is the amount of risk, this is the level of return. We're then going to move on to the probability of the return. By the way, we look at this on both a post and pre-tax basis. We can then move on to the probability of a poor return. Now, in this instance, we're going to look at, say, 0%, minus 5, minus 10. You might even want to look at it as a return relative to inflation or even to the cash rate. In this particular example, the probability of a return less than zero for the two different portfolios, so for the SAA portfolio, there's a 19% probability over a one-year period. For the SRA portfolio, it's an 8% probability. We then move down to this chart here, where we're looking at the cumulative return projections. Now, we can look at this both on a simultaneous basis. This is the two portfolios. The middle line here is the projected cumulative return. And then we've put the boundaries either side at the 10 percentile level, so the potential paths. Then we can also look at it, lastly, by taking the existing portfolio and minusing the new portfolio from it to see what's the net effect of changing from one to the other. Now, lastly, the SRA Advisor Tool has a settings page where all the client data is inserted. That data is kept on the planner's servers, not ours. Now, these include details about a client's tax position, their leverage, their direct equities, holdings, etc. Now, because this is web and permission-based software, it recognizes the planner when they log in and inserts those expected returns and fees that are consistent with that particular dealer group's approved fees and return expectations. Now, these can be locked or left unlocked. If they're left unlocked and the planner actually changes that, then basically a timestamp image of the page will take place to ensure that there's not inappropriate use. Now, at that point, what we'll do is we'll break for some questions before I'll finish up with a summary.
I suppose as far as the key takeouts and what I would take out of today's session as far as taking it back to your offices in terms of portfolio construction is that the guys have highlighted that there can be some shortfalls in strategic asset or SAA portfolios in terms of, I suppose, we need to be careful about what we're defining SAA as. I think in the context of this presentation, it's assuming that it's based on static portfolios with a passive approach and probably don't include things like alternatives within the strategic framework. I know that probably many people using strategic asset allocation frameworks today would be including things like alternatives and other asset classes within their SAA framework. So I suppose in terms of my takeouts, I think if you're being flexible about your SAA approach and including active managers and alternatives, then you may not be as restricted possibly as suggested. I think one of the other important messages from the presentation is that we need to be continually revisiting the allocations or the asset mix that we have for investors, whether it's by reviewing the strategic mix that you have for a client or using some software such as this to help to determine whether the risk that the client's taking on is necessary given their objectives and their time frame. In terms of probably just a question to David and Simon, I suppose the presentation has, and the process as far as I can understand, has a reasonably high emphasis on defining the risk you're taking within a portfolio, particularly in terms of standard deviation. I suppose two questions really. How does an advisor know whether 5 or 9% standard deviation target is necessarily the right starting point for a client? And what about other risks other than volatility, such as credit risk, liquidity risk, which is particularly an issue, I suppose, for more conservative investors?
All right, thanks. The question was about, firstly, there were a number there, I'll try to remember them. The liquidity risk, we acknowledge that for different liquidity requirements, it's based on the product. When we designed this, we wanted something which mimicked the liquidity of the traditional strategic asset allocations. And so we've avoided, I mean, just as it from a product point of view, the way we have structured it is that we've avoided all investments which are not priced on exchanges. And so we sailed through with no liquidity problems last year, unlike a lot of other alternatives which had to close up their funds. So the point is, liquidity is one of the other two types of constraints. You have the boundary constraints and liquidity constraints, which also can control the amount of risk. And it's a product characteristic rather than a strategic risk allocation. There was another question about how does the advisor choose between 5 and 9, and I think it's the same answer as why they choose between some balance right now. You know, balance and high growth, it's the same thing. The advisors are the experts in that, but really this is just a way of simply replacing that. In fact, balance has an equivalent, which we think is roughly 5, like I said, and high growth has an equivalent, which we think is roughly 9. But the point is, once you make that change, you can then say, well, there's lots of other ways I can achieve that 9 rather than sticking with the asset, other asset classes. There were some other points I made with regards to the inclusion. A lot of others, advisors currently do include alternatives in here. We only had a few minutes to talk about this here, but this is dealt with in a lot more detail in the paper that I submitted to the Portfolio Construction Forum. And the point really is that once you link yourself to a set of asset allocations, whether you might even have 15% in alternatives or 10% in infrastructure, the fact you've written it down on paper means that you're stuck with it. In a year's time or 18 months' time, you might want to change that view. But once you've got that in your asset allocation, then it's an anchor. It's a behavioural finance says anchors are bad, you know. And it stops you from moving away from that to something else which you find is actually better. Okay, well, the SRA9, its risk equivalent is a growth fund for 75-25. We actually want to distinguish that from the SRA4. So they both have an absolute return focus, but we actually do acknowledge that there is some value in having an equity risk premium bias in there. So the SRA9 is the only one with an equity risk premium bias. I guess that's your answer. We've compared it in our presentation. So that the handout versus a growth fund, so obviously it's massively outperformed growth funds over that time. Mm-hmm. Well, the SRA 4 and 9 are both multi-manager portfolios. The SRA 16 is a global tactical fund, so effectively a hedge fund, paying hedge fund-like fees. And the reasoning behind that is we encapsulate all our tactical asset, not all, but most of the faster twitch strategies in the SRA 16, whereby we can put those into a portfolio which we've used 60 different futures markets, a whole lot of different things in a form of derivatives, which is in its own fund, whereas we want the SRA 4 and 9 as products to be fairly clean, simple fund of funds. Okay, I'll repeat the question. The question related to this chart in which we the comparison of the two pie charts of the SAA portfolio versus the SRA portfolio. We've actually didn't highlight it in the talk, but highlighted the equities pieces by having a bold outline. And so you can see that the bold outline of the SRA portfolio for the equities piece is 1/3 of the total risk, and the bold outline of the SAA portfolio is 75% of the total risk. So the point being that the SAA portfolio is basically driven by equities, and that the SRA portfolio, the SRA 9, this one is only 1/3 equities risk. There's a lot more stuff going on in this than just simply bet on equities, which is effectively what most other strategic asset allocation products are. Well, they're the manager allocations, but it's the alpha bit. It's the tracking error. Well, they're strategies based, but they because they're alphas, they're constructed to be independent of the equities. So the beta has been stripped out. So from a risk point of view, they act independent. And so they act as diversifiers, and we split them out, and we point out that this 47% of this portfolio is actually the most diversified bit. Yes, Adrian. Okay. The question from the floor was about how we manage the liquidity risk in our products. So look, I guess in a way this is a product sell, but we're here really to talk about the approach. But the point is, you can choose your own liquidity depending on the requirements of what you're actually trying to achieve. You can achieve any amount of liquidity that you want. You still the point is that with SRA, you're just also targeting a risk. So with regards to our products, the point I made before was saying that we decided that as a product design, we wanted these to be liquid. We wanted these to be open for business applications and redemptions every month, and with consistent pricing. And so we chose the underlying funds in accordance with that. We're also a little bit worried with regards to some of the bond strategies, so we avoided those completely. Yeah. All right. The question was, how do we believe that we can outperform the market from active management, which seems to be contradiction compared to the point you made about the asset consultants in the implemented consulting products consistently underperforming. And the point is that when we look for products, there's because you're not constrained to market cap indices, you know, there's a lot of those out there who say, well, I've got 40% in Aussie equities, therefore I need to have 40% in Aussie equities managers. For a lot of the larger fund managers out there, there's effectively only 80 stocks that they can really actively trade. There's a constraint on constructing your international equities such that it looks something like the international MSCI World Index. And so what are you doing by your starting point being those asset classes, the traditional asset classes, a lot of managers looking at them, there's basically less alpha. I've proved that, I think. So the point is what we're doing is we look for the most interesting products. We forget about what we should be investing in from a strategic asset allocation point of view, but we come across a lot of interesting products from time to time which have characteristics of advantage, which are unexplored asset classes, or it's a key idea where there's a behavioural finance reason as to why you expect it to persist, or the manager has special access to information, or they've got better models, or there's currently, for the next year or two, there's a effect in the market whereby you know that something's happening. There's a tax effect or something like that. It's just use your imagination, basically.
I think I'd add to that. Because you're using the market cap weighted index, and as David said, that forces you into those larger, older, more efficient markets. And that's where alpha generation is so difficult. When you start moving away from those and you're not constrained by market weight, and you're not constrained by asset allocation, then of course your potential to find those people who can generate alpha, not because they're specifically more skilled, but as David said, because they're in a particular market where they've got advantage as well as skill.
The question was, where are the funds that we've invested in? At the moment, they're all Australian registered managed investment schemes, but a lot of those are global portfolios. We want to have transparency of the managers as much as we can. We have a choice of, sometimes choosing an institutional grade manager over a smaller boutique that we're not so close to, and we'll probably go with an institutional grade manager. But really, from an approach point of view, you go with what your strengths are. And there's probably some people here that have got their favourite managers, but they can't invest with them because of some rule that which really doesn't make sense. Make a whole lot of sense. I might be preaching to the converted, but the point is that strategic asset. I mean, what you're talking about isn't really what I would call strategic asset allocation. Then sounds like you're already on the way. Just to continue on the other one, the point really we're trying to make about this is that strategic asset allocation gives you a number. Investors choose from a risk of, a spectrum of risk, basically. So we're saying that choose your risk as a number rather than as a set of asset allocations. That's really the main point we're trying to get. And what we're offering with SRA is a standardised way of actually of achieving that. If you use a different set of assumptions, you might come up with a standard deviation of 12. We might say, using the same asset classes and risk different set of risk assumptions, we come up with 10.5. But really, the point is you create a spectrum of risk for the clients to choose from, which is effectively equivalent to an SIA, but it just means that you can be much more flexible within that, but communicate it and control it within a definable framework. Okay, so let's go on. The question was how stable are our portfolios around the stated standard deviations. There's always a problem with sample error, and we went through a great sample through the period of which we've been managing funds. And so we've our standard deviations of for the 4 is just above 5, for the 16 is just above 18. But when you compare that to the SAAs, they've blown out. We see that the risk of Aussie equities has gone from, or historically 8 or 9, when you're looking about 5 years ago, has blown out into the mid-20s. So one of the key points about what we're saying is when we see risk coming, we actually dial down the risk as well. It's not just saying, we'll stick with it for long term, because this could be the year where it all falls apart. And that was something we identified in 2008. But an example of the SRA 9 is that from a... I said that basically has a... I'm not sure if I said it, but we expect it to be 50% equities over the long term. We were running that in the teens as effectively a tactical play, but we just didn't want it to be taking the risk of that 50% long-term expected allocation to equities over 2008. So that's been running at about 6%. So that's one where that's been running at two-thirds of our stated level. And just recently we've upped that above 50%. So we're now taking on a bullish bet, which we expect to be running above 9%. So as I said in the talk, expect it to run for 5 years, target over 5 years.
Can we just go back to your comment there where you're saying you're doing all those various things, which is... No, I think that's fantastic, because effectively what, as Dave was saying, is we're preaching to the converted, because what you're doing is taking the basic SAA approach and then extending that in a number of ways. Imagine, but you're starting with a series of model portfolios and then making variations around that theme. What SRA is doing, saying, is effectively a business process re-engineering exercise. Instead of fiddling with an existing process and keep on adding and subtracting things, start with a clean sheet, set yourself a risk target, because essentially that's what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to achieve as much return as you can for a given level of risk. And by actually getting rid of all of those constraints and just having that one linear constraint of a risk target, you'll be able to do all of those things more effectively. That's it. The next thing is that what that means is when you're communicating with your client, instead of saying, well, SAA tells you what's in your portfolio, SRA will tell the client what damage it can do to their wealth. And that's a much easier thing for them to understand, because really when they get their sheet through showing their pension and it says you're down 28% on your super, they don't really care where they lost it. They care what they lost. So we're very much on the same page here. Once you start talking about standard deviation of risk, as you've seen with the SRA Advisor tool, you're actually able to then start modelling a lot more readily. Because if I said to you, what's your asset allocation going to be in 2018? You'd say, what the hell are you talking about? But I can tell you from that risk path what our SRA, what our allocation to risk will be, and I can tell you that the various strategies will be all over the place, but I know what the risk will be because we're targeting a given level of risk. That means we can then start managing those return shortfall risks, those life cycle risks, those longevity risks a lot more readily. By converting it to risk, which means you're doing the same thing as us in that respect. You're going the next... We're just saying, go that next step. Do what you've just said. In terms of funds, or in terms of, because in the 4 and the 9 that would be the funds, and then in the 16 that would be futures contracts, which is a constant process.
The question was, how many changes have we made to the funds over the 20 months since inception? There were 13 original funds. There's now 6 of those, and there's 19 in total. So we've added 13. There's also a third, so the answer is yes and yes. The question is, what's our offering? Is it an implemented approach, or is it software? As investment science, yes, it's an implemented approach. We're portfolio managers. We're the geeks. We see this as a solution whereby we can do things that financial advisors can't do within our pooled fund, and we have advantages there. There's also just simply the software which allows you to combine the investment portfolios such as you might create with your own skill, and you can bring them up into an SRA number. We will also license the SRA designation to you such that you can have a string of, say, model portfolios for your clients where they can choose between 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and we'll give you the stamp of approval to say, well, that's a true SRA, which is then comparable to our SRA, which is then comparable to somebody else's SRA. And that's the key difference between what we're calling SRA and a standard deviation targeting approach, which is the SRA is a standardized platform for comparison.